So many people wouldn't even know what goes into that. I mean, you get decide a place needs a garden. How do you go about that? You gotta design the whole box, like say one down in the harbor or something like that. You gotta build that up and everything like that.
Yeah, well, the harbor boxes, those are annuals, and so you gotta know your annuals. Or you gotta know the heights. First thing you gotta know is the heights, and then you want stuff to hang over. And then you want the heights, that you don't want stuff, tall stuff in the front. And then you got to know what stuff works good in the rain here. Now, the basic gardening is basically like, these are like the five things you need. You need to start with ground covers, perennials, shrubs, and trees. And if you, that's like the library. If you look at the library and you look at the bed, you'll start at the edge of the rock wall, be the ground covers. And then you'll have perennials, then you'll have some shrubs, and then you'll have the trees. And if you get all those five in your garden, then you're going to have bloom and color basically the whole year. And so, and then it's just knowing what kind of each one of those to put in your garden. And then there you go. And then here in this country is like with like the library or around town, you'll see that wherever, most of the beds are raised. The ground's really cold here. So you get a raised bed somehow, and there's a million ways to do that. And then you'll have good success. And then it's just making good soil. And they take a lot of food here. It's very rainy. And I feed my plants a lot. And it's over the years, it's they used to say, like, never fertilize in the fall. But latest studies show that you should fertilize in the fall. And I came to that conclusion on my own. It was like, well, I think that it just got raining, you know, like September just rained, you know. 20 inches. I think they could use a little food before they go for winter. So some of it's instinctive, you know, you kind of just look at what your plants are doing. And it's about being a caretaker, I think. You know, it's like you're just taking care of them and you just pay attention. And so like the greenhouse here, is we grow these annuals and they go out there. And some years they're just, like last year was really tough because it was such a rainy year. And so they still pulled them off. But the year before that, they were absolutely gorgeous. And that's the one other one, that'd be the sixth one, would be adding the annuals to it. And annuals are not a permanent garden thing, so you just can manipulate the colors with them. You can bring a lot of colors, but bring a color. In this country, because it's so green and dreary sometimes, color goes a long ways. I think it's made a big difference for the community, I think, to have color. And I've been told by more than one people, like from the Chamber of Commerce, that they say that Petersburg is the prettiest town in Southeast, and that's our gardens and everything else that we've done nice, you know.
Yeah.
So and the other thing I have to say is like it's a group effort. I couldn't do it without all the nurseries, you know, it'd be my friend Denise and Ann and, you know, Craig and Dave and Mona and Dave, you know, without them, there's no plants, and so you can't do anything. And that really changed. When I first was here, there was very, very little plants here. And Denise started a nursery, and it's just really grown. And then the other thing, I still have to have, like, Public Works helps me all the time, or even just the mechanics keeping my stuff running. And so, you know, it's been great. And, like, Glow's been great to me, and Joe Bertinelli's been great to me. He's put me to work in the fall. When I used to work 8 months, but they would put me to work like another extra month or two, and it really helped me get by. And so, and then eventually, when they moved me over to Parks and Rec, they gave me a year-round job plowing snow in the winter and stuff like that. So that it got better, you know.
So I meant to ask about the structure of your job. You work for Parks and Rec, but you're answering to all the departments basically.
Well, I'm responsible for the town. It's like I don't answer to any of the departments. And in some ways, it's pretty. I pretty much work for myself no matter who I work for. I wrote it down. I had five bosses when I worked at Public Works, and then I did a couple temp bosses. I had Glow and Joe, and I've had like five bosses at Parks and Rec because. The last 7 years, there have been a lot of bosses and stuff. So basically I'm responsible the way my job description is. That's the way actually all cities are. The groundskeeper is responsible for like a maintenance man. I'm responsible for all the grounds and the care of all the outside stuff that the city owns. So whether it was you know, South Harbor, which is GLOWS, or whether it be the libraries, I was responsible for it. And I like that, though, because it's, you know, it makes it real easy, because then you know what it is, you're responsible for all of it. And then, so, the cemetery is a little different because you're responsible also for the gardens and the lawns, but also for the burials. And the burials are a very important part of the job. And I buried, I think, over me and others, because you can't do it by yourself, some of it. And so a lot of 150 people or something like that at this point. So it's a big part of the job. But, you know, the people really appreciate it when that day comes, you know, and it's your family member and they trust you and they, you know, they can count on you. So that part's been like, you know, it's always sad, but, you know, you're doing your part. And you know, everybody, whether it's their grandfather, whether it's always a loss to them. I mean, I have to say, you know, I'm sorry for their loss. I usually just keep quiet about it. It's hard to say, you know, what to say at those points, you know. So I just try to do a really good job of taking care of the graves. Mm-hmm. And there's over 1,000 people buried here.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, so it's that one area that the cemetery is just, we're a little overwhelmed all the time. I mean, it's you know, it's a lot, because the headstones, everything sinks here. There's a lot of work. There's a lot of work on the cemetery that it's never done. It's never caught up. But she did a really good job on the Deb Kent, my old boss, did a really good job on the original planting, and then I've just added to it and brought a lot of different stuff in that different. I like different heights of trees and stuff, and so that's been really the main thing I did. And I fixed all the graves at least once, twice, three times, and that's been like, you know, like I said, it's a constant thing. But I love the cemetery. It's a beautiful place here. Beautiful view. Both of the Narrows and of Devil's Thumb, and I have my own office, I have my own garage, I have my own greenhouse, so I'm really lucky.
I was going to say, it's one of the nicest pieces of real estate in town, I think.
Yeah, I think when they picked it, they thought that, you know, and it's been here a long time, like since 1927. I mean, the cemetery alone is like Don Nelson, he's turning 90, and he did that book, Petersburg Profile. And you can come up here with that book and walk around and actually see all the graves and the people that he's talking about. So the history of Petersburg's here, and their families are here, and it's a big story. And it's a veteran cemetery, and, you know, you'll talk to Paul or whoever. You come up here on Memorial Day, and you realize how many vets that we have that served in, you know, for the country. It's a lot. And so that's something to be really proud of, this, as far as a small community. And I was told by Fran Jones that like our cemetery is one of the best looking cemeteries in Southeast Alaska. And I really believe that. I believe that. And that was before me, even, that the cemetery has always been really well maintained and took care of. So that's something we should be proud of. A lot of people don't come to the cemetery. They don't realize how beautiful it is. But when they come and they actually show up here, they're like, wow. I'm like, yes, it's a very beautiful place. You know, we have the gazebo up there. And during the COVID thing, there was a group of friends that came up here, and that's where they would sit on the benches and be 6 feet apart. You know, it was really fun to see, and fun to see them using it that way. They love it. All those people love it up here, and they came up here for the whole time. And so that was nice. So it serves a lot of good purposes and stuff. And for me, I think the main thing is that I think that I came at just the right time to see the gardening change. Because in Juneau, it had started like 10 years earlier. So I kind of got the ability to learn it there and then bring those skills here. Because I had worked for the Forest Service before that. And those skills kind of like transferred over as far as the manual labor, the chainsaws, and the hand tools and stuff. So I was qualified when I applied for it, in the sense of starting off. So it just turned out good.
I was just thinking back to the last few years and the extreme gardening conditions we've just seen in the last 3 or 4 years here, from extreme drought to record-setting summer rains, like you mentioned, and now we've got a late spring happening. How do you make plants grow in this condition outside of the greenhouse?
Well, you know, good soil, good drainage, you know, the plants that can do better in the rain. And sometimes you lose, like the annuals, you'll lose the perennials and the shrubs, you'll lose the flowers, but you won't lose the, you won't lose the plant. The worst enemy of all the gardens here are the deer. They are the, if somebody asked me, well, what should I do to build a garden? I'm like, build a fence, a really tall fence first. And it's not really, I mean, because they will destroy your garden. Or like say, I love the garden out of Outlook. I had the fence off one area over by Jody's, and I'd like to fence off the other one, but then it wouldn't look as nice. And I put fences around them, but they keep the stuff from expanding. They're not, at this point, they should be like, you know, 2 foot taller and 1 foot wider all the way around, and they just, they're kind of winning the war. I'm surrendering it. They're going to be here long after I'm
besides
gone.
Besides fences, do you put anything on the garden to keep them off? Any?
I would if I had a home garden, but because I have so much, I do spray deer off sometimes. But it's just because of the rain. It would be like a full time job. Now it was really nice. I have that bed down there, right down there at where the quilt shop is, and where I think it's one of the realtor place now. That little cement box is across from TU. There was for about a couple of years, the lady was spraying all the bulbs really grow really well in there because of it's elevated, it's warm, and she was spraying because you can't grow any tulips in this town because of the deer. And she kept spraying off all the deer off and kept the deer off it for me. But now she's gone, they're back, and I can grow daffodils, but you can't grow tulips. Once they know, then there you go. Yeah, that part's hard. Yeah, and they're very brave. They'll come right downtown in the middle of the night. There's no place that they won't go. So,
and, I know I've had to fight them off from my house just to
on the porch, probably. Yeah,
they're not afraid. Have you heard from people over the years about your work and the appreciation for?
Oh, the community's always given me really good feedback. I mean, above and beyond. I've had many editorials in the paper. I've had just constant good feedback. And people that you wouldn't expect, you know. I mean, I remember when I first started, I was gardening down there at the boxes for Glow, and some of the fishermen weren't too interested in spending money on flowers. But over the years, I kind of won those guys over. They're like, oh, it looks great, Jesse. It smells great down here. And so I think they've seen the value it. And I wasn't, you know, I was, it made me, you know, I understand. But some things are like, you know, or is it necessary as like, a wastewater plant? No. But does it really make a difference in your lives? It does. And so I think that the community, I don't think they'll ever go back to being, I think they will always want good gardens and all of it. And I've been really thankful of that, because gardening is kind of, it's about life, you know, the gardening is a life. And then it's also about art, you know, and you do art because you like it, like you do art, you know, you have to like your own art or, and so I like my own gardening. And then when you get reaffirmed that it's nice, that they like it, then, you know, it's good. Now I'm sure that, you know, after maybe 24 years, maybe some people would want a different change. I think gardens, you plant them for them to grow for a long, long time, to be here way after you're gone if someone takes good care of them. And that's what, and so there'll be some changes that have to happen naturally, like you add stuff that dies or replace stuff. So I think they'll be here. I think I've given it a really nice gardens for a long, long time. I have workers I work with now that they weren't born when I started this, and they've grown up with these gardens their whole life. They, you know, I've always been the gardener, and they've always walked by my gardens, and they've always enjoyed it, even as kids. And so that's kind of cool. That's something you get in Petersburg. And there's like three of them that are working at Parks and Rec right now. They've known me my whole life. They've known me as the gardener. So that's the way Petersburg is. You're always like, well, even if you don't know the person's name, it's like, you know what he does, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, so. That part's been really nice. I've really enjoyed that. And I worked private for a few years, and I was able to do a lot of nice work when I worked private. And if I stay here, but I think I'm going to have to move for a while at least. And if I come back, I'll probably work private summertime. And that'd be fun, too. Because I really like, I like going out to the nursery and look at somebody's bed, look what they need, and go out the nursery and then do the shopping and do the design in my head and then go do the planting. And I love that part. That's fun. It's fun for me.
Yeah, what's that process? Do you sketch it out or anything like that?
Well, you know, I can't draw very well, so I take tape measures and I know basically like the size of the bed and how many plants in the bed, you know, how far. I plant closer than most people do. I don't like weeding, so I plant it really close. And I found that it's almost easier to pull a plant later if it gets too big than to spend 5 years weeding that I don't like doing. And so even after you mulch, that's how you slow down the weeds. So I like things really full. And so I'll go out there and look what they got. And then, like I said, the heights, the blooms of the year, and just, you know, just come up with what you would think would look nice, and then do it. And it usually works out pretty good. It's like even like Viking Travel, that's my bed. I mean, all the beds in town are mine. I mean, they're all mine. And Outlook was, I tried to do like a fall color. I think you remember when you interviewed me. I was really trying for fall colors, and I pulled off the fall colors, but you know, Mother Nature always has its say, and the wind blows the leaves off really fast out there. So I never planned for that. But so sometimes I'm like, oh, well, almost added colors for a little while. They go quickly out there. But I still, you know, wanted to try it. It worked out good. That's one of my favorite gardens. It's very peaceful there. And then I really, you know, so everybody has different favorites. I think it would be fun to see, like, if they did a survey, what's your favorite garden in town? So I have a really nice bed up at the ball field that I planted. It's got really nice birch trees, and it's just a beautiful little bed. It's a gorgeous little bed, and that was fun. And so, and I've had lots of helpers to help me. I've had a lot of workers work for me, and I've had a lot of, like I said, different bosses, and so.
So if you had to say a favorite, you'd say Outlook Park, or?
I can't say the favorite. Outlook's my favorite place when I want to, sometimes for working, because it's so relaxing there. But I think in time, the library will be my favorite garden, in time. And then Lumber Street, when it's in bloom and everything's perfect, and the annuals, it's pretty hard to beat it. But on a sunny day, Bushman Park, if it's a sunny day, it's a shade garden, Bushman Park. And if it's a sunny day and it's hot outside, like 80, and you're sitting down in the Bushman Park, you're like, wow, this is a beautiful park. And so, yeah, I think it's an outlook. It's just very peaceful. Something about the view. It's a friend of mine said it's kind of like looking at a giant lake almost, because the water's so calm for the most time out there. And then, you know, you'll see whales out there. So you have both of it combined. So, it turned out good, and I was happy with it. And so I'm pretty much, and usually a lot of times, like when you plant a garden, you just you plant it, and then the more you look at it, the more you see is what I'm saying. It's like, oh, I could do a little more here. I could do a little more there.
Yeah, so when you say in time, the library could be, so you have a vision of what it will be in a year.
Oh, yeah, 20 years from now. Okay. Yeah, you have to plant trees. That's one of the biggest mistakes, is that planting, well, because we get so much weather, a lot of people, like I say, Mountain View Manor, Ann planted all that, I think her name was Ann, she planted all the stuff up against the building. So the plants did really well, but as time got bigger, as they got bigger, the plows, everything destroyed them. And so then, basically, most of that garden has been removed. And then it would be the same way if you plant a tree, and if you plant too close to power lines. You know, they planted some trees, like on Lumber Street, that I really made one of the spruce trees, and I really did that. If you hedge them and everything, you can make them really ornamental. And I had to do it, because otherwise they'd be up in the power line. And so it got planted by, before I got here, by some second graders or something. It was a class planting for like Earth Day, I think. And so a that you just got to take the time to read. Make sure you know the size and heights when they're full bloom. That's really a big part of gardening. And then, so, but for me with the library is that it has good color in the fall, and it has good color in the spring, and then it has good color in the summer, and then you have the annuals, you get more color. I think it's becoming a very nice. It's a slow process to make the soil good here. That's the main thing. And little by little, the soil's getting better there. And so I think it'll be an outrageous garden, I think, in time. Outlook, too, I think, will always be absolutely beautiful forever.
I think what strikes me about Bushman Park is I walk by and I'm just amazed by the volume of, I think, their crocuses that come up in the early year. And just, yeah, so it's a dense mat of...
If you gardening, you should don't plant in groups. That's always a big plus. Then you get bang for your color, see? And also plant in groups. And the one thing is, like, they'll say, like, with bulbs, like, 6 inches deep and 6 inches apart. Well, here, because it rains so, you dig a whole 6 inches, you start hitting water. So I have a mound there, I've mounded over, and I plant them like 4 inches deep. And then I mound them up with some mulch and stuff so they don't do the freestall. They'll throw out of the ground. And I just plant them heavily. I like everything really close and lots of color. But if you look in the magazines, they're never like sparse unless you're looking at a desert landscape or something. It's all like overwhelming, like baskets are overflowing and you couldn't put anything more in there. And so that's kind of what... You gotta sometimes read the tag and throw it away, you know. Mm-hmm. Just be like, well, that's. And even with the annuals, and I'm saying, even the annuals, even if you overplant a pot, you can always pull some out later. But you can't, the months or weeks that you're waiting for it to fill in, I don't like waiting a long time for them to fill in. That's my thing, too. When I plant, like in, even here in the greenhouse, I'm growing them as the years change. I've grown them in bigger containers, and I plant like a instant garden. Like when I take them out, they're already big and ready to go, and they don't need 3 weeks to grow. We have a short summer, so that's kind of what I do. I'm like, oh, there we go. Looks nice. Today it looks nice, and then after that, it's just maintaining. The other thing, like with the annuals, it's all about the fertilizer. They have organic fertilizers, and they got a new one. I read it one time. I wish I'd remember where it was in one of the magazines. And it's like at 20-20-20. And those numbers make a difference. So you always have to fertilize. And what I fertilize every time I water. And I always like at a quarter strength. So if you like organics, just try to find the best one. If you like the other, then use that. And then constantly feed them, constantly deadhead them. And then the ones that don't like the rain, keep them out of the rain and they'll do good for you. And then some that like the rain, if it rains like they did last summer, you're going to lose some of them. It's just part of gardening. It's like you're going to have some loss sometimes. It's like we just had a tree fall over, fell onto the onto my office, and luckily it didn't hurt nothing. And it's just a big old tree that got too much snow and fell over. There you go.
It seems like it was a hard winter for trees. There were a lot that went down in the woods that I noticed.
I think the ground's so wet, the root balls aren't deep on trees here. And that's, it was one of the jack pines, the lodgepole pines, that it doesn't have a big root ball. It was so amazed when it pulled out. It has like a 6-foot root ball for a 40-foot tree. So, and that's kind of like what happens with trees that, if the roots aren't stronger than the top, it can't do it. So, and when the ground's so wet here it's really wet this summer. It never dried out last year. And then we had those crazy rains in the fall. The ground is super wet right now. Mm-hmm. So it'd be really nice this summer for things to dry out. And so, so we're going to have to probably cut down a few more just because they're getting so tall that they too might fall over. So that's gardening for you, It's like, oh, didn't plan for that, So you live and learn,
Yeah. Do you ever have a vision for a garden in town somewhere that you didn't have time to make happen or the means to make happen here or that you wanted to?
Well, at this point, I always wanted one on Sandy Beach. That goes all the way back to when Linda Snow, do you remember her? She was a city manager. She goes, there's no park other than Sandy Beach on all of San Diego Beach Drive. And I'm like, and so when that happened, that really was like a fulfillment of like one more park. Now, I would like to redesign. I have an idea in my head for Sandy Beach itself. And what I would like to do is like leave a lot of the trees along the creek and everything, but there's whole areas that are not being used at all. And I would like to turn like those in the lawn and get some ornamental color down there, like some maples and stuff. So I'd like to have it both native and, you know, an ornamental, like, you know, nice, like, cat Sarah's, you know, color down, bring some color down there. And then I have a little mini circle down there, and I like to maybe, like, there are some things that the deer won't have eat. And that was something I always wanted to do, is make a garden down there that, between native plants and some plants that, like, they won't eat the poisonous stuff. That's the only thing they won't eat. Something like that. But I don't know if that ain't going to... I'm going to try to talk to somebody before I leave and even and give them like a rough idea. I didn't take care of Sandy Beach for years, and then when they switched me over, I started taking care of it, and so I'm saying, as time as you look at it, you start seeing it better. I'm like, because now I understand, like, we're at the original Sandy Beach Park. I know where the trails are, and I'm like, oh, I get it. It was because they didn't drive out there; they walked out there. Over the years, I'm like, oh, this is how, that's why that trail's here. And so I kind of have an idea for it. It'd be a big project, but like Public Works could do a lot of the construction, and it would be like, it'd take like 10 years, I think, or something. But it, and there'll be controversy, because some people like it just totally native. So it won't be my fight. That's what I think. And if somebody wants to do it, I'm gonna leave it to them and then see what they think. And then, but I think Sandy Beach has gotten a lot better as far as just, we brought in a lot of sand, Glow did that. We had to put up a couple berms, and so it looks better, I think.
Yeah.
And it's getting a lot more use, I think, for the dogs. It's mostly a dog park, I would say, that, you know, it's a really perfect place to run your dog on the sand and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, but yeah, I don't, there comes a point where the city is like, you can't do more if you don't have enough money or time or power and people. Sometimes you shouldn't build a garden if you can't take care of it. And that's kind of like where we're at. We're like, well, we can't take care of much more than what we got. And then and they kind of, most of the bosses understand that. That's happened even with our trails that we have more than what we could take care of. PI is doing a really good job of that now. But it was like, we don't have the equipment nor the crew to take care of those trails. They were great ideas, but without someone taking care of them, they quickly, you know, deteriorate. So mm-hmm. there's been a lot of, like, learning curve on that. Like, you know, you can overbuild, you know. And so, but, yeah, Sandy Beach, I would like to have a garden down there. That's probably about the only place. And that one could be done even the next couple of years. I could tell the couple people that have worked for me that are still here and be like, well, you know, you guys should do it. It's a perfect place to learn. They could come up with their own idea, their own design. That's how you're going to do it. It's like you doing painting. You got to do it to do it, you know. And you're going to have to do it. And there's no complete fail. I mean, it's going to look better than it did. And if you make the bed right, you can always change the plants and get better at it. So that's probably about it. That's probably about the only place I can think of. And the rest of it is like just adding to it more and more every year, making it better. You can make it better every year. And I've made my gardens better every year. I don't want them looking the same. I want them to be better. And so that's been fun.
Have they already filled your job, or are they
filling? They filled my job. They hired Drew, and then and he had worked for me before, and I wish him all the best luck. And they still got to get an assistant position, because I think they made a new maintenance position, and so we'll see. That's hopefully, and we need one. Actually, there has been nobody really working in the parks doing the maintenance. That position got cut because we lost the ball field, because the ball field's under a contract, and so there's always changing. So hopefully they'll get a good assistant, and then And Drew, he's got potential. He knows what to do. He's just going to have to start somewhere, just like I did. You know, just you have to love it, because gardening's you know, like you look at the nurseries or stuff. It's a full time job. It's like I worked every Little Norway. I worked every 4th of July. Every sunny day when people are going fishing, I'm out flat doing the gardens, watering, and you have to be really committed to them. And so it's like, that's the caretaker part. It's like being a dog owner. You know, you buy the dog, like, oh, now I got to walk them every day. And, you know, it's a love relationship. You got to give them love to get the love. So,
yeah.
So I'm hoping the best. So, you know, I'm always like, I'll be on, if he needs help, all he's always got to do is call me, and there I am, because they're my gardens. I mean, I'm really invested into them. I do not want to see them fail. I don't want to see them fail. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I planted them for 20, 25, 30 years, a lifetime, and just, so I'm hoping the best, yeah. And my last year in the greenhouse, and it's been a good year to be in the greenhouse, because it's been a terrible spring, so. Yeah.
So what's you plant in? What's your schedule for the year? When do you get these little guys going?
Well, I start somewhere because the light's good enough by March. Okay. So I start like the first week of March or second week of March. If you start right March 1st, they sometimes get a little leggy when by the time you go plant them. It's okay, but when leggy means they're a little long, they're outgrowing their containers. So if you grow a little later, then they won't be as leggy, but they won't be as big when you put them out. So it's kind of like, what you can't really put annuals out till after like May 7th to like Mother's Day because of the frost. And so that's, unless it's undercover. You can, you know, if you're undercover, if you're willing to bring it in and out to like a, but, so you start then, and then they grow fast. Once the germination is different for every seed. You just got to know your seeds, be patient, and then once they get up, they start going, and then you got to transplant, and then they really start growing after that. And then, like I said, give them a little fertilizer. You got to turn them around. There's a lot you got to do, like, because of the light, you know, they'll start growing one way, you got to turn them around. And there's all these little things that you got to learn. And when I was first a groundskeeper, I worked in the greenhouse in Juneau, but my boss did all the seeding. That's kind of like the groundskeeper two is what the state calls them. It's like a higher level of like the person that works year round is doing the fall cleanup way into November, and then starts in the spring. They do all the starts the flowers, gets them up and growing, and then the crew comes on and helps them. And that's kind of like, but in 6 weeks, they're amazing in 6 weeks. So. And the main thing about greenhouses is ventilation. They get really hot. Like people ask, like, well, grow in the summertime. It's too hot in the summertime. I have fans and everything, but they be constantly on. It's constantly be 100 degrees in here. So I have a friend, Hoi Yi, he used to have like a garden and outdoor garden, and he used to cover it with plastic and everything. But after a while, he just started putting up slats and knocked down the wind. And he just kind of, he has a raised bed too. He does his gardening off a bench. It really helps your back. And it's a really nice garden because it gets really good air. But doesn't, you know, he plants a little later now because he wound up just fighting the humidity. And so there's all these things you got to learn about greenhouses and stuff. And so, but you can learn. If I was building my own, I'd build one, even if I didn't have fans, where I could really ventilate it, get a lot of good air for it, and then the rest is trial and error. Buy seeds and do your best. And then, and sometimes, I've been planting, you know, everybody has an arch enemy, and I have one flower that will not grow for me. I have to go buy it from Debbie. And Debbie will tell me that she has a flower that don't grow well from her, and what kind of trade, you know? That's what I like.
So what's your enemy?
the rocket one, it won't grow for me. It just, it's a famous flower and it won't grow. I can't do it. I don't know. I don't get it. I stick to, I don't know what I do wrong, dude, but you just give up. I just go buy a flat from Dave or Mona, or go buy out there at the flower farm. It's like, okay. And but it's, you know, I don't know what I do wrong. I get them up, but they just don't do what they're supposed to for me. So it's good though. It keeps you humble, you know. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, there you go. So I grow a lot of the same flowers over and over, but I put them in different spots in different ways. And I'll try new flowers. Now, Juno, they have a giant greenhouse, and they grow a lot of stuff that we don't grow down here. And but they have more room to experiment and stuff. And then I brought a lot of the flowers I love that I learned from Fairbanks, like sunflowers, things that people didn't think would grow here. I'm like, well, I got to try because I really like sunflowers. So some hot flowers, just find the right spot for them. And then, yeah, you just, you know, if you find a flower you love, just keep working at it, see if you can make it. Most of them, they tell you, you know, zone 4, there's some basics, you know, has to like wet climate, or, you know, you can't be growing like flowers that grow in the desert here or and stuff like that. Most of the stuff we grow is like English cottage garden flowers. Like if we went to England, I'd be like, oh, I know most of that stuff. I think I'd be very happy with the gardens there. It'd be very comfortable feeling. So that's kind of like, or down in Washington, but they have a little bit better, a lot better summers than we do. But so, yeah. Now, you know, in time, you just get better, or some people are not meant to be gardeners, I'll tell you. No, it doesn't click for them.
Well, just thinking myself and trying to keep a garden going, just a small one, I'm thinking the list you must have in terms of all the gardens around town, all the places around town that you have to keep up, it must be a little overwhelming at for a while.
It can be overwhelming, and you know, you kind of got to like have a list in your mind, or a list on paper, or a list on your iPhone, and you got to go to each place and be like when I worked in Juneau, there was the Glacier Gardens, and it used to be called the Yard Doctor, and that's kind of like what you are. You're a doctor. And you go check all your plants and be a doctor for them, you know, and like, oh, why are you doing, what's going on with you? You know, and then some of their patients, they're like, you're super healthy. And another one, you're like, not so much, you know, and you do what you can. And so I planted, like, say at the library, I planted vine maples in this one spot, two of them. Vine maple is a very tough tree. Both of them died. After the fall, next spring, I had to prune them, and I could prune. I'm pretty good at pruning, and you know. But every year it was like by the second year that I had to prune them again, and I'm like, oh, now I pulled them. So I redid the soil there. I'm like, well, maybe the soil's not real good right here. Redid the soil. It didn't happen. So I pulled it out, and then Karen Hofstede gave me a larch, a beautiful larch that she brought down from Anchorage. So I planted that larch there. And it's a deciduous loss, so it, you know, like Matt Garrett's got to realize that, you know, he's taking care of it now, he'll be taking care of it, you know, and so Tara will be like, she didn't realize, it was like, it loses its leaves, so it's not dead, that's what it does. And so it's doing great there, it loves it there, and so if you lose, try something different. And I'm really happy with that, like, I mean, it's really going to be a beautiful tree there, and it already is, and it's going to be the perfect size for that corner. And Karen's just really super happy that it's growing and everything. And I don't know why the vine maples didn't make it there. I can't tell you. I just, like, after a while, you just got to give up. Try something different. You know, like, if you look Nordic Drive, you go around town, you look at the maples, and then you go out, like, where you live, and the maples do good from Nordic Drive on Sandy Beach, much better than anywhere else in town. They get... Everywhere else, they kind of get tall and skinny, and they get big and fat there, and I don't understand why that is, but that's why, like, if I was going to do Sandy Beach, I would try those maples, because it seems like they like it out there, and it may be just a little bit colder in the winter for them or something, you know, but something's going on. I mean, it's real obvious when you go by and look at them.
Wind off the sound or something?
Yeah, you know, there's so much going on, so many variables, but... People ask me what to plant in their garden, and I tell them, like, take your phone, go around and look at everything you like in people's yards, and then just and do it and copy it, you know. The greatest form of flattery is copying, so just, you know, just say, well, I want one of those, I want one of those, I want one of those, and then, you know, and try to order them and get them and put them in your yard and then and see what happens, you know, and you'll probably get 90 or 80% of what you want. You know, you might get 20%, but it just doesn't do as well somewhere that they did somewhere else. And then you'll have a nice garden, though.
And that strikes me, too. There's areas of town that are a lot different than other. I mean, there's cold areas of town and warm areas.
Yeah,
and windy,
like Sandy Beach, a lot colder with the wind. And even in summertime, you know, everybody goes out there in the summertime. You're a little, because we get so used to being, you know, we love hot weather until it comes. And then we're like, oh, it's hot now. You know, and so we go out there and it's like, feels like 10 degrees cooler there. And then there's microclimates and places out of the wind. And, you know, like the cemeteries, like, really gets good sun and doesn't get the wind up here. It gets the wind, like, above it. Like, you see the flags, but, and so, yeah, there are places like lilacs, like sunshine. They, you know, you got to, like, and that's one thing that gardening, I always tell people, there's a good book called Gardening in Southeast Alaska. And they have, I have the old one, they have a new one. And the gardeners in Juneau have basically just came together and said what has worked for them, seeds-wise, plant-wise. And even if you're a vegetable gardener, you know, the seeds are not all the same. They have different times that they come to fruit or whatever, and, you know, the vegetables, how long. So there's a lot to it, and a lot of people have already done a lot of the work for you. And so you get the book, and you read it, and you buy those seeds. And then if you buy, you can't just buy any trees here. And then, so, you know, you have to have a little, you got to, gardening, you have to self-educate yourself. You can't, that's how I got better was I worked for the city of Juneau. I was a groundskeeper, which meant I took care of the grounds. I did mowing, the weed whipping, the planting, and I got really good at all that. But I wasn't responsible for, like, designing a garden or like, knowing every plant name, like, all the shrubs. My boss was. But people started asking me to come work for them after work, and I was like, well, I could use the money, so... So then I went home and got, they had a book, The Gardening Southeast. I took the Master Gardens course, and I just started learning myself. So when I went to people's yard, that I, you know, I was confident I could do it, and started doing it. And that's what happened in Juneau. The first rock wall I built by hand, a lady asked me if I could build a rock wall. I'm like, yeah, I think I can, because I saw a friend of mine had done it, and he worked for the city, and he came from Washington. And I watched, I paid attention. And then I went home and got a book on, you know, building a rock walls, and then I just practiced and I got better at it. And it was really fun. The first one was really fun. And she was really happy with it. And so that's kind of how you do it, you know. I mean, there's some really beautiful rock walls around town that were done by the construction guys of the Reeds and, you know, and Rock and Road, and then you got the homeowner that's made some really nice rock beds, the tiny ones, and the rock's a nice bed. The only problem with rock beds is weeding. The weeds get in the rocks, and so over, like, when I did Outlook, I didn't build rock beds. I used that wash rock. I wanted different colors, and I wanted the ability, I didn't want to fight with all the weeds that get in the cracks, and that was just my thing, because I had other beds where I had the rock walls like that, so I really wanted it to be, like, I like the wash rock because it brings a lot of color, even in the fall, or whatever. But a lot of it was so that I hate weeds. That's a lot of my gardens. Like, oh, how can I not weed this garden? That's a big motivation for me. I never enjoyed it. I do it when I'm doing it. I kind of get in the zone. I can enjoy it, but it's not on my favorite list. But it's a big part of gardening, though. Like the biggest thing at the library is the weeding, because it's a raised beds and it catches every alder, the weeds want to take that place over. They just literally wanted, like, that's the thing about Alaska, it wants to reclaim stuff. It's just like, if you go away, it'll take your garden back. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, you know, that was just temporary. So if someone doesn't take care of it, it won't last. You know, it's like the cemetery, the headstones disappear. If you don't know where they are, I have to bust out the map sometimes, being like, you know, I think there's a headstone here that I'm missing. And, you know, I have to find it and cut the grass away from it and be like, yes, there is a headstone here. And so, you know, that's the way it is. It's like, that's, you know, you'll see old gardens. Like, even you go out old cabins, you'll be like, they say they'll like, to find an old cabin in Alaska, one of the biggest reasons to know someone lived there, you find rhubarb. Mm-hmm. The rhubarb will still be there and the cabin will be gone. You know, it's all rotted away, but the rhubarb's still there. So I thought, well, that's pretty, pretty good way to find one, actually, you know, be like, someone lived here. The rhubarb didn't plant itself, so.
You keep a chart of all the headstones, though, where everybody is?
We have a map, yeah. We upgrade the maps every so often, because every time someone passes away, you know, their map changes. So they may have, like, and the map will say, like, they reserved a spot, and then we, when they pass away, they'll have their name on the map. And we have people up here that are memorial stones, too, so there's no urn there, or there's no coffin there, you know, or there's no body there, but, you know, they want to be remembered, the family wants to remember, and that works, too, you know. I tell people that a lot of people don't want to be buried at the cemetery, but I tell them, well, you know, we do that for people, that they can have a place to come put flowers, you know, and not have to go maybe like out to Duncan Canal where the, you know, or wherever the person's ashes were spread or something like that. Most of the time it's the urns that are, and I have no problem. People, that's their choices, but some people like a little bit of both. They like to spread their ashes somewhere else, and then they like to have a memorial stone. And I'm like, well, that's great. We can do that. So that's been really cool. And now we have the Columbarium. We have at one time when we did the expansion, we were expanding faster than we were expanding pretty fast. And so we did the expansion. There's like 300 plots there. And even though the Columbarium is so small, there's like, I think, like, don't quote me on this, I think there's like 300 in the Columbarium as far as how, because it's like, and so that's, That will take us way into the future. So the cemetery is actually, because we have no more land up here. I checked with Kenny Tinas, and, you know, he was a great guy, and he brought out the maps, and he showed me exactly where, how much land we have left, and it's pretty much zilch. But now, by doing those two things, we will have a cemetery for the city for forever and ever, right? Well, way into the future. And then they can also build another Columbarium and be even more so. Because it used to be more graves over urns, but now it's more urns over graves. And they take up a lot more space. Even if you're going to have more than one urn in your plot. So there's, you know, and it's all a matter of personal choice. So the city of Columbia. And that's the one thing that's really nice, is that we do have our own graveyard. A lot of graveyards, they charge people for caring for them. Like, if you're in California or even in Juneau, I'm pretty sure there's a maintenance fee that they charge you. And here you pay one time, and then the city takes care of your family for forever. They're never going to stop doing it. So that's really been cool that way. You know, it's like, you know, I'm thinking about getting one of the Columbarium ones. As I could see myself, you got to be buried somewhere. For a long time, I was like, oh, I don't want to be buried at the cemetery. I work at the cemetery. But then I'm like, well, let's face it. You know, it's like, you know, I don't want to be buried in the desert and have somebody not pay the $40 thing, you know what I mean, for me to be taken care of. And my family be like, well, you know, I'd rather have them ship me back up here, and then I'll just be, I'll be there, and then, you know. And then somebody that lived that long enough be like, oh, yeah, Jesse used to work here. And so, you know, it's not part of the story. You know?
Get to be with your handiwork for the rest of the
time.
Yeah,
handiwork. Well, you know, yeah. Well, you know, I'll definitely be here. And so, and you know, and that's the one thing I'm seeing, like, over the years. You know, I came here and you watch the passing of the guard, you know, of, like, people that pass away. And then I was young when I was here, and now I'm older, and, you know, and then I'm seeing, like, people my age or just a little bit older passing away. And that's part of being in Petersburg, too, is that, you know, the sadness of it, but also the that you actually knew that person, you know. I mean, you had the chance to know that person. In big towns, you read an obituary, you don't know anything about them. You know, here you actually, oh, you know, you learn a lot about them through an obituary, but, you know, you... just like we just had a recent burial, and there were so many people here for that burial, and it was really nice to see. Mm-hmm. And then, and so it's like you can tell, you know, and then, you know, you know, we've had tragedies, and it's all part of the community. And then, you know, the cemetery is here for everyone, you know. And so it's been a great job. I love my job. And I worked here, I didn't, and I like, there's a lot of other good city jobs, but this was the job for me. Mm-hmm. It was obvious. I found my home, and so that's what I'm saying. If I go away, I'll probably come back. Everybody comes back, so. But I'll go away for a while and then come back, and then we'll take it from there. If my health holds up, I'm going to keep working.